Old time preaching. I have the years to support that. Breathe on us, breath of God, fill us with life and you, that we may love thee, know is you, and do what thou dost do. Thank you. I think I can safely say that when we think of creatures, things which have life, we acknowledge that they will experience two important things. One is change. The other is motion. Motion, perhaps, where they are located, but usually motion in the sense of advancing. For example, the tadpole in the water does not remain a tadpole forever. The tadpole will not always be in the water forever. It will move on. The chick in the nest doesn't remain a chick forever. Neither does it remain in the nest forever. And so it is with the church, because it has life, as we have seen this in the resurrection of Christ and in the miracle of Pentecost. We see Paul's expression of incredulity when he meets the risen Lord on the road to Damascus. Saul, who has been persecuting the church, and Jesus will say, "Why are you persecuting me?" And Paul will say to himself, "Church and Jesus, they're the same thing. If I'm persecuting one, I am persecuting the other." And so he will go forward now as a disciple. So this is one of the expressions of movement and change. Those of us who study church history can see the evidence of change and movement through the centuries, and it's well documented. It goes on and on and on. And in this morning's gospel, John has Jesus telling us that there will be that time when he will be with them on earth no more. And the Father will send a comforter, a counselor, someone will support the disciples, who will remind them of what Jesus taught and what he did, so that the movement will go on, but it will undergo changes. And changes and movement always have consequences. European theology quite often points out that the development of the church as we know it was not as immediate as sometimes we think it was. It was not easy. After his ascension, there is a problem with who amongst the equal followers will become the first of equal people. Who will replace him in the sense of real identified leadership? Some will say, "It'll have to be Peter." Did not Jesus say, "Peter, you will be the basis of my church"? Some think it might even be the brother / cousin of Jesus, Thomas, who became Bishop of Jerusalem, a shepherd of the people, located at a very central place. Will he be the first among equals? Some will say it will be Paul, who has taken the good news outside of Israel and has taken it to Jews in the great diaspora, wherever they are, and has been surprised to find out the Gentiles wanted to know the story as well. Will it be Paul? And a fourth possibility, first among equals, when a farmer in North Africa dug up what we know as the Coptic Gospels, in the content, we find a problem between Peter and Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene, who sees herself possibly as the one who will be the leader, the first among the equals, because she said she, of all the followers, had been the first to meet the risen Christ. Therefore, this will give her a bit of primacy over others. And so this tension remained with them. And the problems of trying to stabilize the followers will continue on and on and on and on. Constantinople will no longer be the center for the followers. Rome will become. There will be all kinds of Reformation events associated with Rome and others who wanted to try and find out where we should be going. The discernment of the counselor that God will provide, the discernment of that counselor becomes a task in itself. Who can accurately portray the will of God through the counselor? And it'll go on and on and on. Those of us who've been Anglicans for a long time, me, for let's say 50 years, you have seen change after change, have you not? Remember when you were small, did you ever expect to see a woman as pastor of a church? No, you didn't. Women in those days could not enter the sanctuary unless they were altar guild. Women, when I was ordained 60 years ago, could not be members of synod. Only two could. One, the president of the Mothers' Union, and the other president of the Women's Auxiliary. They could, to give reports. That was all. Remember what church was like in those days. For Sunday month, you had morning prayer two Sundays. The third Sunday was the litany. Remember the litany desk? Good Lord, deliver us. Remember that? I used to kneel on that. I'm big. I thought I would fall over into the aisle. And then on the fourth Sunday, we might have Holy Communion. But remember, after the sermon, those who were not confirmed had to leave the church. Remember that. The front rows in city churches had a gate, and you paid rent for your pew. And sometimes that pew would be in a family for generations. No one else could go there. That's my space. The treatment of women. I remember in a city church in Ottawa, watching a woman ushered out of church because she was not wearing a hat. Yes. That's what we remember. I remember those things. And we thought that was right. Slowly, 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 we have been able to give women a rightful place in the church. This has not been quick, but it is growing. And we are in a place now where finally we are beginning to see gender does not play the great role we once thought it did. If you were male, if you were female, you went your separate ways. We are beginning to learn now that as a child of Christ, we are a person, and we seek persons to be united with. They might be the same sex, gender as we are, or they might not. What is the purpose of union anyway? I realize it is to keep the human race going, that there will be generations on and on. But at the same time, what else do we get out of a union? Do we not get a sense of security? A sense of being identified as someone special? Do we not learn from the person we share accommodations with, and that they learn from us? Do we not grow as a person as we go through a union, whether separate genders or the same gender? This is what we are wrestling with right now. I see the church finally working this out and going to the counselor that God promised and saying, we need help. We need help. Be the one to illuminate us. Bring us to knowledge of who we should be. We have seen in the recent months a real problem with the coming Lambeth Conference. That's when the great provinces of the Anglican Church around the world come together in Canterbury, England. Not to come up with a new dogma or anything, but to examine where the Anglican Communion is going. It used to be the bishops that came to that were men. They were married to women. And there was always things for the women to go to at Lambeth. There were garden parties and so forth. It was a social gathering as well as theological. It is different now. Some of the bishops who are going are not men, but women. Some of them have joined together with someone else of their own gender, another woman. Bishops going, many are men, but many are now living with another man. And so the Archbishop of Canterbury said, we can't have this. These spouses, whom we don't recognize as a church yet, they can't come. They can't be part of this. And then there was an outcry. And they said, wait a minute. A masculine gender bishop coming with a masculine spouse, because they come from a province that does this. You can't keep the spouse away, because didn't we also teach that two become one in a union? If the spouse can't come, then the bishop can bloody well not come either. And when you start going at it with that kind of logic, you have a lot of North American, European bishops who can't be there. And so the Archbishop of Canterbury is having to weigh this out, realizing that perhaps he has made a mistake. However this turns out, there still are a number of African bishops who will not be there. Not only will they accept same-gender unions, they will not accept women in the ministry at all. And so you see what has happened, what has evolved so far in the Anglican Church. The counselor is working overtime as he tries to bring truth and reconciliation to many of the Anglican provinces. There will be a day when my great-grandchildren, if they're going to church, may be part of a decision-making to see whether or not the Anglican Church should have a mission on Mars. It will come. And there will be great division amongst Anglicans who will say, Christianity was meant for this planet only, not the solar system. And the others will say, God created a solar system. If we are God's people, we ought to be going out into what he has given us. This is really, really something. Okay, for you, what do you do about all this? I would say, pray. Pray is the key that opens so many doors. Talk. Have conversation. Even if you don't all agree, keep the subject alive about gender and where the counselor seems to be leading the Anglican Church. I get great delight in watching CNN News, because no matter what the subject is, there's panel after panel after panel after panel. They have more paneling than the church has. But they have thesis, antithesis, and synthesis in many arguments. You learn from that. Read what you can read about all this. And then the third thing is time. Time. The Anglican Church may be going spinning around quickly, but it may not be advancing very quickly. It took almost 2,000 years for us to suddenly realize that women also had the right to be ordained. That's a long time. Will the gender situation take 2,000 years? I don't think so, because things do move rapidly now. The people involved are better educated, higher educated. And so I think things will come to a quicker ending than some of the things which bug the Anglican Church. And so these are things that you can do, we need to do. Since I started off with prayer, I wanted to go collectively in context to an old Celtic prayer. God be in our heads and in our understanding. God be in mine eyes and in our looking. God be in our mouths and in our speaking. God be in our hearts and in our thinking. God be at our end and at our departing. Amen.
Amen.